Across Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about Previously in Europe. I'm your co-host Hugh in London. I'm here with the co-host Kieran in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
Berlusconi is 5'7". Mm-hmm. This is a thing I know now.
Why?
Wait. Because when you Google Silvio Berlusconi, the next, like, the Google autocomplete is Silvio Berlusconi height. And I'm just like, why is this the most searched thing?
That's actually quite disturbing on a number of levels. Mm. I would have thought one of the older athletes would just be like, fucked face or something.
But it's also just interesting. The other interesting thing that I found out from giving into Google's autocomplete suggestion was that the height of Italian politicians is something that's apparently well documented. Yeah,
I can't explain that. I'm not gonna try.
Mario Renzi is almost 6 foot.
I wonder how big Conte is.
Right,
he seems like a medium boy.
Maybe. I feel like he's also getting smaller. I feel like he's at that age.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I thought you meant like politically. That's satire.
No time for short kings of the Italian Parliament.
Speaking of kings, this week, as part of our recurring segment, No Elections Left Behind, as much as I would like to talk about something else, for instance, like the ongoing Golfgate scandal with the Irish EU commissioner or other Brussels bubble nonsense that's going on, which there's a lot of, we are going to talk about the Belarusian presidential election. Elections have square scare quotes around it, unlike normal, but it doesn't. This is where we discuss an election that has needs to be discussed because it's a presidential election or important in some way.
Yeah.
This, however, has a big standout where I would call a lot of countries' elections like elections in quotation marks, but this, like, calling an election is, you know, very silly because the official output numbers don't have like a close relationship in any sense to the actual votes cast. So, this is like we talked about the Belarusian parliamentary elections last year, right?
Yep.
And had a very similar conversation in a sense where it wasn't really an election for a number of reasons. Both due to electoral fraud and then also the structure of it is quite suspect.
Yeah, I think this is we might revisit some of those points because I think they still are important, but we'll also talk about how like situations within Belarus have changed.
Yeah.
But Hugh, before we get into the wider conversation of what happened after this election, which who knows what happened there? I didn't see anything about it. Anyway, let me give you some facts. Scare quotes. But
quickly before facts, do you want to there's a very good article in New Eastern European which was before the election, which is basically like ahead of the presidential election. Here's some background. It's from a Polish political science researcher, Maxim Rust, and this is the quote from the end of it, which I quite liked, especially now. The elections will be held on August 9th. Nobody is sure how they will unfold or how the authorities will deal with the planned mass protests in the aftermath. One thing is certain, regardless of the election results, Belarusian society is not what it's going to be a few months ago.
Yep, there you go.
It's just pretty on the money.
I think it's worth pointing out that, that's a good example, actually. People did kind of see a lot of this coming. I was keeping abreast of this on the run-up via the Foreign Exchanges Substack that sends it's like a geopolitical inbox kind of email newsletter. Mm-hmm. And they also kind of correctly pointed out that like this election is tense. Things are getting weird in Belarus.
Yeah.
But let's go into some of these facts before we talk about that in a broader sense. The election was held in the 9th of August 2020. There is a presidential election in Belarus every 5 years. It's a straight-up popular vote. I don't know if there's actually a two-term system. It has never come to that. A two-round vote.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I guess it's never really come to that in a long time. But turnout, 84.17%. This is about 5 million people, roughly half the population of Belarus.
Mm-hmm.
And our main candidates were Alexander Lukashenko, the incumbent. He's technically an independent, but he's heavily... there's alliances. We talked about this before when we talked about the parliamentary system. There's alliances in Belarusian politics. He belongs to Belarus, which is just another way of saying Belarus, I think.
Yeah.
And, well, independent, he's associated with this. He got 80.10% of the vote. Just some like 4.5 million votes.
Mm-hmm.
His contender was the teacher wife of an arrested YouTuber, which is a great sentence to say. Okay, and bear with me here. Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya. I think I did that right. Probably didn't. Yes, she also ran as an independent. She's associated with an alliance called Country for Life, which doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I know nothing about it. And she got, according to the official records, 10.12% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit of the kind of like background of this and why people were rightly claiming that this election might be different from the usual situation. Because Belarus is in a situation where like Lukashenko is very much a dictator. He runs a kind of like semi-authoritarian state. I don't know how you want to define Belarus. The politics for a lot of Belarusians was never really on their mind because it's not in their control. Mm-hmm. But for a large part of his presidency, he was legitimately popular. That started to crack. A couple of reasons have been cited. There's currently economic problems within Belarus. People are losing their jobs, otherwise fairly cushy jobs. And also the handling of coronavirus. For a long time, Lukashenko and his government claimed there were no cases of coronavirus in Belarus. They went ahead with the like May 1st parades and public gatherings and stuff, which most other countries that celebrate like May 1st is a big thing. Cancelled those.
Yeah.
Like neighboring countries, like Russia didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of
he's concurrently saying that there is no coronavirus at the same time when he was still like implying that was probably the case. He was also saying it would be great if they tested the Russian vaccine on Belarus. It's just like, but why do you need the vaccine? Like, if there's no prevalence of the virus at all?
Well, then we would send the person that we give the vaccine to like one of those filthy infected countries like Poland and see what happens. I think the other thing that people noted early on, like on the run up to the election, that was different from other elections was, as I said, Svetlana is the teacher wife of an arrested YouTuber. The YouTuber was the one who was actually originally running for president along with other people, and through various methods, mostly through arrests, a lot of those other candidates were gotten rid of, including Svetlana's husband, who's still in prison as far as I understand. So she ran in his stead, and kind of ran on the platform of like, I'm basically just going to be a surrogate for my husband, among other things. I'm not going to diminish her platform entirely, but like, the point I'm trying to make here is though, is that arrests in advance of a Belarusian presidential election is not usually how this stuff is handled. Through like whatever methods we suspect the Belarusian state, like media control, ballot box stuffing, effectively, like no opposition candidate wins, but they're also not, it's not required that they're gotten rid of usually. That's what people were remarking, is like, this is different. Like people were like, Lukashenko is nervous because why would he be getting rid of people otherwise? He genuinely seems threatened by this, which is why people like the Polish researcher you quoted earlier probably correctly predicted that this election is different. The general vibe in Belarus at the moment is different than it was in the last election, 2015. Things are going to kick off.
Yeah. So like the obvious support for the opposition is like is more than double what in the last like three or four presidential elections anyone has gotten.
Yeah,
because like, in her
by
like
their own numbers.
Yeah, her fraudulent vote number is higher than in most years, like the opposition combined. And I guess if you're at the point where, you know, there's mass protest rallies being organized that seem to actually have reasonable backing before the election even takes place, like that's a lot more notable than in most years where it's effectively just been like, yes, what election? What are you talking about? To the point where like I've been talking to Belarusian people and being and kind of querying with them saying like, oh, well, the parliamentary election like was quite recent and like the protests around that were pretty much non-existent comparatively. And they were just like, I didn't even know there was a parliamentary election, like, as in they're so disengaged because it doesn't matter and hasn't mattered for a lot of them for basically their entire lifetime. This is certainly their voting age lifetime, anyone kind of you know of younger working age. There'd be no reason for them to even bother paying attention to that unless something gains traction, which this has.
Yeah, so another aspect of this as well is what I kind of alluded to earlier. From also conversations I've had with Belarusians as well as people who have like visited, you know, have enough competency with like the Russian language to kind of get a look in at Belarusian society, namely in comparing it with Russia is also very interesting. That like the Milo Edwards from Trash Future, for anyone who doesn't know, is like a English comedian who also is fluent in Russian and actually did like have a like has a comedy career within Russia and as a part of that toured Belarus several times, like played in Minsk and stuff. And his kind of assessment of it is that the Belarusians are like completely, as you were saying, completely politically disengaged, but also significantly more chill as people than the Russians. And one aspect of that seems to be that under Lukashenko, there has been kind of a more stable financial life for the average Belarusian than the average Russian. I mentioned this to you before we started recording about the idea of the, like, I think it's called, I literally think it's called the authoritarian bargain or something like that. I think when this kind of theory in political science was come up with, they were studying Libya. But like, I think it applies here, which is the citizenry agrees, quotation marks, to give up all political power as long as you keep the jobs flowing. Like, and that is one aspect of like what people were saying about why they think things are going to kick off is because finally now there seems to be a problem with the flow of these like relatively cushy state jobs that are coming in, like Belarusian jobs before coronavirus crisis, like global recession, whatever you want to call it. The generalization of a Belarusian job would be you're employed by the state. It's not necessarily glamorous, but there is like yearly wage increases. There is a degree of security that like the average Russian job would not have, and things like that. And while like your life is maybe not as quote unquote glamorous as the average Pole or Estonians, your job security is there and a life can be had, as long as you remain apolitical. But that seems to have like that veneer has cracked and the situation has like disimproved economically within Russia or within Belarus. We can also talk about the geopolitical aspect of like Belarus trying to like cozy up to the EU while also like having a very dependent relationship with Russia, which Russia doesn't appreciate and the EU also doesn't necessarily appreciate. So that's kind of a part of the problem here. Because yeah, yeah, we were, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's like there's a number of levels. I think a lot of debate over like, well, why is Lukashenko just, why is it now and why has it not been a problem before? And like a lot of people's, and again, what I've heard from, you know, either reading Belarusians or talking to people from Belarus, that a lot of the feelings are effectively nobody cared about us before. So you basically had, well, all of the state control is already captured. So you would have to have an enormous popular uprising to actually like get rid of Lukashenko. And the way this generally happens in other uprisings isn't like a mass, like local uprising. It's a local uprising combined with international pressure or the removal of international support. It's very unusual for, like, in the history of revolutions, for there to be a, like, completely people locally there led one while all the external structures remain equal. So effectively, if you had everyone in Belarus is trying to get rid of Lukashenko and both Russia and the EU are just like, we're going to stay out of it. It'd be very difficult if he controls the military. You'd have to get the military on your side is effectively what you would need to do.
Yeah.
Or have a very, very long, prolonged struggle. So effectively, that's a very different thing to have an appetite for. And I think this time there has been reasonable success in both showing that, like, the kind of veneer of democracy was obviously
farcical.
Yeah, it was farcical to begin with, and most people would acknowledge that, but kind of say, oh, but we're gonna try and reform that gradually over time, and basically pointing out that, like, well, we've tried that, and it's not going to work, because once someone becomes sufficiently successful to potentially be an issue, they just get disappeared, as we can see for the our friend the YouTuber. And I getting to the point where the international pressure can start existing in some form, whether or not that actually makes any difference. It's more the absence of international support.
Yeah. Kind of,
I think, more what people are looking for.
I think one aspect of this that needs to go mentioned is like comparisons to like the Ukrainian situation of like Maidan in 2013.
Yeah.
So we have something very, very similar in terms of like what is happening on the ground. It's like it's a popular uprising. It is a rejection of the kind of like given leader, the like kind of relatively unchallenged leader of Yanukovych. Concerns I have like with Belarus that I think played out in Ukraine is a lack of a decent opposition. I think there's a bit of a media project at the moment to kind of turn Svetlana into like someone like the shining face of the people, but I genuinely don't think she is. I think a lot of Belarusians are like fed up with the current situation rather than really inspired by her. I think once the elections, after Yanukovych left Ukraine, when the elections rolled around to select the new president, people kind of very quickly realized, oh, there wasn't really this like radical alternative that was going to turn Ukraine around here.
Mm-hmm.
Like Poroshenko was not that. And none of his like...
No,
none of the running mates were either. The other situation was that like... both Ukraine and Belarus exist in this kind of, as you were saying off mic, incredibly shitty geopolitical position, like shitty for the perspective of the people of Belarus and the people of Ukraine, of like being torn between two geopolitical powers that, and the like the grand stage of things are largely viewed as like chess pieces rather than like people's homes. And that's like, that's a kind of shitty situation in itself. So in the general, and like the EU did very little in Maidan, but they still kind of like voiced support for the protests and like were somewhat excited about the potential of Ukraine becoming like more Western orientated.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's also like, there's stuff with the US and like, I don't know, everything like Hunter Biden was involved in, but like...
They viewed Ukraine as a great business opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's always what this is. Yeah. But like, we now get into the situation where I think the EU is a bit more cautious with Belarus. One, because Belarus is much closer to Russia than Ukraine is. Like, not physically, I mean, like, in terms of ties. Physically, yeah. They're about the same. They're also probably more apprehensive because I think they might be afraid of the fact that, like instantaneously, like, almost 1 year after Euromaidan, or Maidan as it probably should be called, in Ukraine became this complete, like, geopolitical clusterfuck that, like, is now just, like, kind of like an unsolvable situation. And it's very easy, it'd be incredibly easy for Russia to recreate those situations, that situation within Belarus. Now you get into the situation of, like, well, Russia probably wants Belarus more and would probably be willing to do more to maintain a loyal Belarus. But then again, the other aspect of, like, Ukraine versus Belarus is Belarus doesn't have tactical naval ports that Russia effectively controls, as they did in, like, Sevastopol or whatever in Ukraine. The situation. But I also, one, if I'm going to try drown out the, like, bummer aspect of this, one positive thing that I've seen within Belarus that does separate it from Ukraine is, as a part of this whole, like, Lukashenko made sure that jobs remained relatively stable and cushy for the average Belarusian for most of his time as leader, a part of that was unions. Unions are actually still quite powerful within Belarus. I mean, for historically they had to be, like, loyal to the government or whatever, but they exist as an institution, and general strikes are becoming, like, a thing in Belarus, along with the, like, street protests, whereas Ukraine only had street protests.
For a quick, like, reminder of how bad the, like, status quo of what, like, what is now the status quo in Ukraine is, there is now just contested territory between Ukraine and Russia. So, like, the whole broad geopolitical logic of these countries, that no one in the West is willing to, like, push too hard on improving the conditions in, or, like, doing anything really. if they notice, like, hey, your leader is, like, incredibly corrupt, we're still going to do business with them because we like this status quo where they're kind of in between, because it means Russia aren't too angry with them and we're not too angry with them, and it's incredibly shitty for the people. And what ended up happening with any hint of that changing in Ukraine was, like, obviously everyone remembers, you know, Crimea being annexed, but then there's also, like, the Donbass region, like the east of Ukraine that borders Russia, is now just this limbo zone where they can't hold Ukrainian elections because the election observers will just be killed. There's, like, active just military stuff happening all the time, on and off, like a ceasefire now and then, and that's, like, a, you know, not probably what's going to happen in Belarus, but if you could imagine if a situation where there was a really, really hard, aggressive push in some form, it's more difficult with Belarus because it's not, like, the existing kind of, like, trade ties that to the same extent with Ukraine. But that Russia could just recreate that system if they wanted to. Like, they could just be like, well, the more Russian bits, we're just going to start a war here. And now we've recreated our buffer zone, which is even better than the previous buffer zone because it's, like, a no man's land between us and everyone else.
It's like, so Crimea is often what people would discuss about Ukraine, but that's basically null, like a complete moot point at this point, because it is a part of Russia now. It is administrated by Russia. It is controlled by Russia. That's really not going to change. The issue with Ukraine is, as you said, the active war zone in the eastern part of the country. Anyone, like any journalist who's on the Ukrainian, like, or the Donbass beat, if you want to call it that, like the Donetsk and Donbass beat, of, like, keeping an eye on what's happening there, it is just continuous, like, ceasefire agreed, 2 minutes later, ceasefire has been broken. It's a relatively insane situation that we have kind of, like, collectively we have kind of forgotten about, or, like, the media has.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I guess I find that very comparable to like the annoyance that you see from reading Belarusian writers of like, no one seemed to care that Lukashenko was like awful. There's lots of political prisoners. Lots of people leave due to like fear of becoming political prisoners.
Yeah.
The economics work out well if you follow a particular track, and then outside of that, there's big problems. There's the constant fear that Russia will cut off gas. it's like a very precarious situation, and in part it's enabled by both like the Russian administration and then also the EU on the other side.
Yeah.
And it's similar to like what's happening in Eastern Ukraine. There seems to have now been an acknowledgement that like no one is really interested in helping Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, like actually stop that war in any substances way, because then they'll have to start dealing with the previous situation, which was if the EU has any stronger trade ties with Ukraine, Russia will get angry, and if they have any stronger trade ties with Russia, the EU will get angry. Whereas now they've created like a new buffer zone where they're happy to have no man's land, they can just all stop talking about it.
Yeah.
And that was what Lukashenko was. Everyone would acknowledge like, oh, we don't think Lukashenko's good, but we're not going to talk about Belarus anymore.
I mean,
this has kind of forced the issue, which it has been a ridiculously long time coming.
And then the other side of this as well is like Russia's like a geopolitical player is very paranoid, and like Putin has a image to maintain within his country of like being strong. Losing Belarus to like American, EU, Western influence would be like a massive blow to that image, to like Russian kind of like geopolitical strategy. And also it would put NATO at the like doorstep of Russia, which I guess it already exists with like the Baltics, but like this is what Donbass and Donetsk serve as like another political purpose, because you can't join NATO if you have an active internal conflict. This is the reason why Cyprus is not a member of NATO.
Yeah, right.
So I think it's also like, also we're pointing out, before we even talk about Ukraine, there's another even more classic example of this. Georgia. Georgia got very interested in joining NATO back in 2004, and now they have two. Well, no, they always had that first one, but they have two internal conflicts now. Of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, and there was a Russian-Georgian war basically over this kind of like posturing again. So like Georgia also kind of exists in this quasi torn between world state. It's been there longer.
I think we should talk about like actual Belarus more, but I think that's kind of like the, you know, a large part of the reason why up until I guess right now to a certain extent like nobody cared. And finding stuff about the election like a month before the election from non-Eastern European specific news sources was, you know, pretty far between, other than that guy's been arrested who was running for president. I was like, well, yeah, that should be more of a big deal considering like where Belarus is in relation to lots of EU countries and stuff. But it wasn't like, I don't know about what it was like in Germany, but you know, it wasn't super talked about, and that was like not an illegitimate concern when the mass protest started happening. There was like people in the West could start to just ignore this if they wanted to. And genuinely, I don't think there would have been the same attention to it if there weren't at the same time mass protests happening in the US that were really fresh in everyone's mind, that had triggered large protests in many European countries.
Yeah.
And it's kind of primed people to a certain extent for, oh, there's this like injustice happening that we should pay attention to, that's important, and like the people involved are important. It's not like a geopolitical like, oh well, you need to, you know, change this statistic to improve quality of life from a distance thing. It was more of a, no, there's a lot of people in Belarus that are in prison for political reasons, and that's one of the primary reasons people are protesting, because this has been bubbling for a very long time, and to a certain extent, people didn't care before, and I think potentially now they do from an optimistic perspective. But yeah, so the aftermath of the election, quote unquote election.
Yeah.
The opposition leader Susana has fled the country. She's in Slovakia still, or she's in Lithuania.
Lithuania.
Yeah, she's in Lithuania. Which I mean, smart move. This was after a very strange episode where she was taken into custody. They produced this very clearly coerced message where she was like, you should not protest, protesting is very bad, and then immediately left the country.
Yeah.
And then about a day later, you know, started doing videos along the lines of like, I have full support for the protesters, continue to protest. I don't know, like, that in particular led me to question, like, how has Lukashenko been in power for so long? Because he seems to be surrounded by very incompetent people. Like, that's like a worthwhile activity.
Yeah, I think it's like, my understanding is that some people have been kind of disappointed with how vocal she's been in support of the protests, even from the Lithuanian perspective. But I think it's also worth pointing out that her kids are still in Belarus and her husband's still in jail.
Yes.
In prison in Belarus. So, like, it did not take, I can't imagine it took a lot to coerce her in that Monday message when she was arrested originally.
No, but it's her clearly reading like a piece of like a prepared statement prepared for her. It's not.
Yeah. The criticism though has remained while she's in Lithuania, but again, I just put the context of her family are probably not necessarily super safe.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, no, for I think reasonably fair enough. And again, to be very clear, she's not like a politician with really specific like policy goals or something that's participating in a normal election. She was very much, her platform was, we are going to arrange new elections and we are going to have them, as opposed to I want to have a full term kind of action. More of a, we all need to acknowledge what's happening. In the initial days after it, the internet was cut off to some extent.
Yeah.
Which was kind of like a reasonably big deal. At that point, quite a few Western journalists were rounded up and put in prison, which again, like, I don't know what your end goal is. If you're like intentionally trying to like stop it, you're like, okay, cool, so we're gonna arrest the opposition leader. Cool, what are you gonna have her do? We're gonna have her read the statement. Will it be convincing? Oh no. Then so, why do it?
So it's interesting because like, this is not the first time protests have happened in Belarus. There were actually big protests in 2004.
Yeah.
And a lot of these tactics came from that protest. So for example, the shutting off the internet thing, it's quite common in Belarus. When periods like this happen.
Yeah.
However, it didn't work this time because people were able to successfully make Telegram work. Without, like, I'm not entirely, like a VPN, I think, is what they use to basically surpass the, like, get past the block. Mm-hmm. But there was a technical solution to that was like widespread, and the protests were able to continue being coordinated via Telegram. The other thing, and this is kind of related to the journalists, is that historically when protests have happened in Belarus before, they would usually do mass arrests and then release a lot of people shortly afterwards without trial. Just like release them back. And this has worked in the past in two ways of like, gets Lukashenko some favor back, look how merciful he is, kind of thing. While simultaneously the people who were arrested are somewhat traumatized to the extent that they are basically convinced not to pursue any kind of like legal action or even like have a trial because they're just kind of glad that it's over. However, as far as I understand, this tactic did not work because a lot of people were released possibly either too early or maybe this is different in 2004, but they came out incredibly beaten and injured.
Yes.
Which did not win back the favor that this tactic had previously won back for people, for Lukashenko and the government.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of strategy that works if the protest is so large, but then once it's bigger there's like a critical mass where how many people could you physically arrest at a time, and how, in what state can you return them in if you need to arrest more people? I think again, there's been the this is just bigger than it's been previously for like a number of reasons that we've discussed, like economic reasons, kind of like the growing dissatisfaction. There's like a lot of things of as well of you get like generational change of like it's Belarusians can travel, like they can see the rest of the world. They have the internet, like, which has just gotten more and more prevalent and shows more and more like what life is like elsewhere and the kind of things people talk about and rights people have and kind of attitudes people have. So like one of the things that kind of has been touched on a lot is it photographs really well for liberal media especially, but it doesn't make it not true, is like this being like an incredibly popular movement with women especially, because Lukashenko is like a massive misogynist, and you know that kind of does work to a certain extent with a different generation. And it's like as time moves on, people are like, I've always been annoyed with this, and now all of the young people are with me. That is a lot of us. I think that's had an influence as well. It's things about Lukashenko have become gradually less palatable for reasons that aren't just economic. There's also like people want societal change, which is just not going to happen under like there is no virus in my country, man. It's like that's going to piss off people who don't care like about the election. They're just like, well, you're endangering us and you're being a shit bag to everybody.
It's straw that broke the camel's back on a situation. Going back to the women thing, there was literally a part of Lukashenko's campaign was literally saying Belarus is not ready for a woman president. That probably galvanized.
Yeah, he made a lot of jokes along the line of like, oh, it's just me and the wives running now. And you're just like, what? I mean, I'm not sure what your joke, like, is your joke just like, haha, imagine a wife as a president? You're like, it's not. That's gonna annoy a lot of people. And one might say half of the people. but of course, they all just voted for Lukashenko anyway, so it didn't matter. Like, pictures of people having come out of detainment are like very horrific, and like similarly the violence at the protests in terms of the attitudes of people policing the protests and has also not been great. That's the thing. I think that's one of the reasons why it's very evocative of why you're seeing like broader support for this among like English language media especially, I think, is because of the mass protest movements and people being shocked by them in European countries and America. To the extent where I've, you know, when I've mentioned this to people and people are sick of me mentioning it, like relatively obscure European politics, people do have kind of the dismissive attitude of like they either don't know a lot about Belarus or would be of the opinion, well, like that's what happens there, is my understanding. The thing they might know is that, oh, Belarus still has a dictator. And you're like, well, yes, but I guess then you wouldn't think it was that weird if there was mass street protests. But I think if there's just been mass street protests where you are and maybe you were involved with them, or you're sympathetic to them at the very least, like this does seem like more of a thing, especially when you see like pictures of real people being beaten and then, you know, the annoyance of all the foreign correspondents there being arrested. So why would you bother doing that? It's just like such a stupid, it doesn't matter.
The situation has gotten, oh god, sorry, there's photos of people's who were beaten. It's very bad. I'm sorry for looking at that mid-podcast, because that has sufficiently distracted me from my train of thought. I think the general thing that concerns me the most is the kind of like apathy. Not on a personal level, because I understand the fatigue of like trying to care about everything that needs to be cared about, because there's a lot out there in the world that does need to be cared about. But like, I guess the general apathy of like the world towards this maybe is as you alluded to earlier, kind of part of the problem. I think I kind of said earlier in this podcast that like Putin is probably the most motivated to in any way intervene, but it would just be like a more loyal version of Lukashenko. I can't imagine how Putin could get what he wants out of Belarus without that being the case. So a lot of the problems that the average Belarusian has would probably not be solved. The Western powers, EU and US, are just not going to do anything. Not that I can't really imagine what you could do that would be in any way good. Because I don't want to like advocate for like a liberal interventionist stance. I don't think those ever really work. And
no. There's no one is suggesting like having the tanks roll in anyway. So
yeah, exactly. But like as you kind of said off mic, sanctions aren't necessarily working.
No, and they're unlikely to have a particular effect because Belarus isn't like a kleptocracy in the sense of like countries where you're like, oh, there's lots of wealthy Belarusians who have like, you know, stolen money from the state, who have all their assets in like banks in France or something.
Yeah,
which is true of like Russian oil oligarchs and like a lot of people who are, you know, that like are theoretically like targetable sanctions. Not like whether or not that works at all is kind of besides the point here, mm-hmm. because it just wouldn't work with Belarus, because there's not like the kind of like Lukashenko's inner circle who would be upset by like personal sanctions. You would have to do like broad sanctions, which would basically affect the people who are already being like passed around as political footballs. There's not really much like from an EU level they can particularly do. Other than voice support, I guess. You know?
Yeah. I'm just reading here that Svetlana, we're referring to her by her first name, by the way, because her last name is very hard for us to say.
That's our fault. That's not her fault.
This is not like a respect thing. This is more just a, we can't say your last name, I'm so sorry. She's claiming that she received 60-70% of the vote, which I'm not entirely sure I believe that. But
There was an independent exit poll, or like independent, but like kind of like opposition led independent poll, which was quoted by Radio Free Europe at one point, which I mean is the part CIA funded. as in like that. This is the thing: if like their exit poll sample has that number in theory, and the official state one had, I think they had Svetlana like getting
10%.
No, it was the exit poll had her getting like 6% or 7%.
Oh, right.
And the official result is 10%. They're like,
right,
look, see the like a polling error, and you're like, mm-hmm. Sure. But I think that's the thing, is like the I've seen headlines that were along the lines of, oh, well, if the elections were fair, Lukashenko would have won anyway. You're like, based on what? We literally have zero information.
Yeah, it's more that, like, I guess my critique would be more just, like, they weren't fair from, not from the point of when, like, the first ballot was cast.
Mm.
It became unfair before that, because, like, Lukashenko's historical, democratic control, quote-unquote, democratic control of Belarus has involved the control of the media as well. Like it's not about like total vote count, because I would imagine actually that like the official results were probably something embarrassing for Lukashenko. Like maybe he got 54% of the vote, and he would consider that an embarrassment, and and that would probably give Svetlana a lot of like momentum. For like the 2025 election, or like, you know, it would change a lot of Belarusian minds into the whole idea that like there is a possible way to like crack this thing open. But like that's kind of beyond the point of like why this election was unfair. Ballot stuffing is not necessarily, or falsifying the results is not necessarily the only aspect of why this was unfair. Like Lukashenko has like 100% media control, or not control necessarily, but like the media is 100% in favor of him.
Mm-hmm.
all opposition support, like all meaningful opposition support, comes from like online, grassroots, independent. Like, her husband is literally a fucking YouTuber, kind of thing. So that's the kind of like situation that you end up in. So I agree with the like the protests. So like the protests are like not super organized, and their goals are kind of all over the place. But like two conflicting goals are recount the presidential election and new free and fair presidential elections. They're not super conflicting. You could technically do both. But like the new free and fair presidential elections is probably the goal you should probably focus for. Like fucking Colin Mulligan on that last one. Who gives a shit what the actual results were? It doesn't really matter. We all know it was kind of like fraudulent for multiple reasons. Just hold the new ones that aren't fraudulent, please.
Yeah.
Because I don't like, I don't think either of these candidates would have won if you had like an actual
who's allowed to run. Yeah, like kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think either of these people are particularly like super gripping towards, like, as far as I can tell from all like vox pops done with Belarusian people and like the Belarusians on the ground, all of Svetlana's support is like anti Lukashenko.
I mean, that's all she needs, you know.
I mean, yeah, in the current setup, that's all she needs. But what we ideally like is a setup where that isn't the like only vector in which political decisions or democratic decisions are made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned unions earlier, and I guess like one of the things that will be critical for this actually is like street protests can't go on forever, and if they don't, like, if no change comes from them, because like Lukashenko is entrenched enough that he can theoretically last them out, you need something else. And I think like a general strike of some form is kind of the way that would possibly tick forward. So there has been a lot of like state controlled firms going on strike, a lot of manufacturing. It's kind of, as far as I can tell, it's relatively patchy. Like, it's not approaching a general strike, but it is kind of, the protests are, you know, still large, and the strikes are happening. There was one incident, as you mentioned, the media, of people walking out of the state broadcaster to the point where the state broadcaster broadcast like an empty lot, like a TV set with music and background music, because they just turned on the cameras and walked out. I think this is the point, is that like there's like broad support pretty much for this around many sectors, and whether or not the mass strikes will like continue in a like in a.
The big one that I saw was the agricultural equipment manufacturing sector. Went on strike, and that is, for anyone who doesn't know, that is Belarus's like golden calf, essentially. That's their like main industry, or like it's a huge one anyway. Like they're a big manufacturer of tractors, for example. And that's like a huge deal for them, because I think they're basically that whole region of the world kind of depends on Belarusian manufactured tractors for agriculture. And
yeah,
it's a source of like foreign currency for the government and things like that.
There was a big one in a fertilizer factory as well. It was I think the quote from the news article was basically, they were like, it is the most, like, it is the largest export in terms of like cash output for any individual item. So like, that's a relatively big deal. I think whether or not they continue to ramp up is kind of up for debate to a certain extent.
Ramping up meaning we need like more sectors to also go on strike, basically what that means. It is interesting, because you're right, street protests have like a half-life. These ones have managed to hold on. I like, if you'd asked me when they began if they'd still be going on by the end of August, I probably would have said no. But here we are. And yeah, it is interesting. I guess the concern, as I said earlier, is there isn't really the rallying figure hasn't mm-hmm. really occurred yet, nor do we have anyone who's offering a alternative vision so much compared to Lukashenko. I mean, the alternative vision being posited at the moment is just elections by people like Svetlana. Or they're basically offering to kind of... Some of the more disturbing ones are like ones who are acting like we should bring back neoliberalism, which is the like rapid neoliberalism of like the Eastern Bloc is why we have figures like Putin, Viktor Orban, Lukashenko in the first place. People reacted quite negatively to shock therapy happening in their country, the shock doctrine. So yeah, that's another one. I don't want to necessarily poo-poo the whole thing, and if elections were held, we might actually get something pretty good out of it, or at least the political freedom to have something pretty good. There was something you said before we started recording that I thought was very interesting, or like a kind of question, right? Mm-hmm. That you had seen a lot of articles saying now or never, basically, for Belarus.
Yeah.
Where what I'm concerned with is... I think there are two options. There are three paths forward, basically, mm-hmm. sorry. Two of which could result in like continuous protest, or at least like the building towards a movement that would be good. Mm-hmm. If Lukashenko holds on to power, I think we could actually, this movement would probably grow or get more organized or something along those lines. Like the anger will remain. Maybe it won't have the same numbers as it does currently, and maybe we have to wait for the next election for things to really kick off and like something massive to actually change within Belarus.
Yeah.
The other situation is, you know, the protest wins out and something good happens in Belarus. The fear I have is that third path, which is the protests are successful, but we get like the Ukrainian election basically after Yanukovych was ousted.
Yeah, right.
Where people realize that what's being presented aren't really very nice alternatives. And I think a lot of people who participated in Maidan have been completely demobilized. Like for like optimistic future of Ukraine. Because Poroshenko was not really an alternative to Yanukovych. He had some like posturing towards the West, but ultimately things stayed very much the same for Ukrainians. Ignoring the conflict that was basically caused, but that wasn't dependent on Poroshenko. No matter who the Ukrainians voted for, that conflict was going to happen. So that's kind of like the situation that I'd be afraid of, that we get this kind of like constantly building momentum, results in the ousting of Lukashenko, and then this just big kind of off note as everyone's just sitting around in Minsk being like, well, oh, what now? And this movement takes the, like the wind is completely taken out of the sails of this movement.
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent. Like, I agree with your assessment of like the potential like option, things that could happen. Play out, but I think they're all, even the worst one is better than the current situation, which right. I like, as in I would generally be afraid of this losing momentum because people realize nothing happens. There will remain like a larger opposition in terms of like organization or like numbers wise than there was before in terms of people who were like engaged with it. Yeah. But if they don't have, if they can't make it happen with like these numbers of protesters and this amount of like striking, then like getting anyone to do anything again is like basically going to be impossible. Because you're like, we're going to have a mass street protest. It's like, we just did that and we did it for weeks and it didn't go anywhere. Like suddenly the onus will be on you to come up with a good plan for how to get rid of Lukashenko. And you're like, well, we had that and it was have the election. It didn't work. And you know, there's like the real potential of like, you know, some form of civil war or something that would just be. I think everything where Lukashenko stays would probably be worse than if they got rid of Lukashenko. And you know, there's a, well, this alternative we have isn't good, or might like actively be bad in terms of like setting back like a more progressive, like positive future in Belarus. But it would still be better than the current situation where if you're too dissenting a voice, you just get like arrested and beaten the shit out of and thrown out of a van. It's like, well, like there's not, I don't think those are comparable. I think one of them is just objectively worse, and it's the current setup where you're just like, it's either a joke that the government is so corrupt and controlled by this one like figure, or you don't think it's a joke and you get beaten up for it. You're like, well, that's not really, it's not really a good like a situation. I know, like there's, I think you're like, your positioning of it wouldn't be now or never kind of situation, but it's in just stuff where, you know, I've seen like in my own efforts to be politically engaged, stuff where it's like, oh, we got this thing done, or we didn't quite get this thing done, we'll try harder next time. You're like, are you gonna try, like, do you legitimately think you're gonna get all these people to agree to do this again? Not for a while, it'll be a while. And that's the thing, is like the I think the worst possible situation is if it does become like a slow grind of like, oh, the opposition has like some like outspoken people, and you're like, they're just gonna get assassinated. <It's>
not... Yeah, that's
like, cause if he's willing to arrest like a YouTuber who like in the grand scheme of things didn't really have that much power, for the potential that he's like a legitimate challenger. If you have like an actual political organization, that's when you're going to start seeing like some serious, more serious violence. In terms of like strike organizing, the Progressive International have lots of links on sorry for the show notes this week, there's a lot of links in it. We've been meaning to do this for a while, but the Progressive International link, and it has like a statement from some workers organizers. They're basically they sum up really well, I guess, like what a large part of like your possible scenarios where you end up with like shock doctrine kind of stuff happening. And the fact that their position is like, no, it needs to be like a worker led like actual movement of the people kind of thing. And they link to like their Telegram channels and like campaign materials for if you are involved with any Russian language media and or you speak Russian, stuff to share online or link to, or people to get in contact with if you want to like get information, which I think was quite good.
Cool.
So that's one of the, if you can leaf through the like 20 links, it's one of them.
It's one of those links. You got a 1 in 20 chance. Roll a d20. Yeah. Click the number link.
Yeah, click them randomly. I think there's, I've definitely seen like quite a few people voice the, oh, but no one's considering what the potential alternatives are when they're like, for lack of a better word, Westerners are looking at it being like, oh, we should have more of a liberal democracy in Belarus. And they're like, have you seen the people who want to have run in the election? I think that's kind of like, you know, it's a shitty argument because I think that plays far more into the like realpolitik, like, big moving things on a chessboard kind of looking at, and you're like, really want to have Belarus fall into this sphere of influence? And you're like, well, that's not, I mean, well, I'm saying we should ask the people in Belarus what they'd like to do. I think it's a really shitty position to take.
I just kind of like, I get concerned. I'm probably like, you probably need to be able to speak Russian or Belarusian to like understand this completely, but like, I am concerned about, like, there are political parties in Belarus that have basically been co-opted by Lukashenko's, like, government. The Communist Party, the Patriotic Party, the Agrarian Party, the LDPP, Liberal Democratic Party of Belarus. They've all been kind of, like, co-opted by Lukashenko's government, but they all kind of represent, like legitimate political points of view.
In theory,
it's just in theory, yeah, like communism, agrarian issues, the Patriotic Party sounds terrible, but like those are things that like you also need to dismantle if you're going to have like a decent election, or like you need to put in the like the work needs to be put in to like turn the Communist Party of the current Belarusian like status quo into a non Lukashenko simping Communist Party that like people could vote for wholeheartedly if that's what they wanted. I just worry, I guess maybe this isn't like an outcome thing. I'm just very concerned about the level in which Lukashenko has ingrained himself, like embedded himself into like Belarusian society and politics.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's just
it's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, and that to some extent does fall away if you cut off the head. It'd be very difficult. I think it'd be very difficult to run like there's the Liberal Democratic Party was one of the parties.
yeah, but
I think it would be difficult to run candidates under the guise of like, and we support Lukashenko for president. You know,
So the Liberal Democratic Party of Belarus is like the Liberal Democratic Party of Russia, which is to say insane fascists. They're not Liberal Democrats at all.
But Kieran, the Nazis were the National Socialists.
The Liberal Democratic Party of Belarus believes in Slavic supremacy.
I don't know what the problem of that is. Again, you're just scared of what the Belarusian people will do, and you're happy to have a coup d'état to overthrow them.
Right.
I think this will just be a play for play repeat of the Egyptian Arab Spring uprising, where they have an election, the people who everyone in the West is scared of win, and then there's a mysterious coup. You know, Lukashenko is suddenly back in power, or like he'll have a different mustache, and they'll say he's a different person.
I like this is the other thing with Belarus. I genuinely don't know who's like if anyone's being groomed to replace Lukashenko.
I don't think there's anyone.
Yeah, I think the Lukashenko situation was, in retrospect, incredibly tenuous from a Lukashenko perspective.
I mean, I wouldn't dare speculate on his thought process because, again, his people think it's a smart idea to like have people read on camera with the like piece of paper in the shot being like, I am not being coerced into reading this piece of paper that I'm being coerced into reading, or like arresting random journalists and then being like, I hopefully they won't report that they were arrested and beaten. Just like, what's your plan? I don't understand. Anyways, it's not the point. I think it'll all be fine, as I like to wrap up the podcast normally. It's all going to be good, and I feel good about it.
Yeah, I feel good about it too. Fuck it. This is probably the best thing that could have happened for Belarus while. Yeah.
Generally, this is like, I feel like this has been a downer because like so many awful things have happened.
But, yeah.
Solidarity with the people of Belarus generally. This is, you're very important to your people. I don't really give that much of a shit about the like large scale geopolitics because I don't think there's going to be a land war in Eastern Europe anytime soon. On like a mass scale. Other than ones that are like for show,
Or the ones that are currently happening.
Yes, well, you know, that's sort of what I meant. But
And on that cheerful note, that has been another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is recorded and produced by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the show, tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is a great way to tell people about podcasts. So if you know anyone in your life who thinks they might like to listen to a hour-long discussion about the Belarusian election, quote-unquote, hit them up with this link to this podcast. Similarly, to spread the word, you can also leave us a 4 or 5 star review on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a 4 or 5 star review with some text telling people why you think the podcast is worth 4 or 5 stars, that helps appease the Apple algorithm podcast gods, which helps us get some more listeners. And lastly, to support us, the most material way you can is send us some money on patreon.com/previouslyineurope. There you can give us some money to keep the podcasting lights on, and we will also shout out your name on the podcast if you donate $3 a month or more. Like these cool cats: Smeiro, Echo2100, Svenvest, Petra V, Patrick Seba, Newt Alexander, Michael Hall, Treesarian, Niall McLaughlin, Subliminal Kid, Dermot Burke, and Justin Paul Sammons. So if you want your name included in those names list, then send us some money on patreon.com/previouslyineurope. For all of the links to our social medias and where to keep up with us, you can check our website, previouslyineurope.eu. Thanks for listening.